Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. You know, it was just over a year ago that Nancy Giles agreed to join me for a conversation, and I couldn't be more excited and honored to welcome her back today. I relate to, appreciate, and respect her take on life, how she thinks, what irks and drives her crazy, what's wrong with the status quo. Nancy's not afraid to tackle any topic. Since 2002, she's been sharing her views, comedic and cutting, on CBS Sunday Morning. It may be 2015, but she remains the only Black female commentator on network TV paid to do so. For her efforts, Nancy won an Emmy and a pair of Gracie Awards. She doesn't confine her opinions to just one network. Nancy's a frequent guest on MSNBC, The Melissa Harris-Perry Show, Hardball with Chris Matthews, All In with Chris Hayes, and Up with Steve Kornacki. Nancy, a ubiquitous voiceover artist, began her career as an actress with the famed Second City comedy troupe. She toured for 3 years. She won a Theater World Award for Mayor, the musical off-Broadway, wrote and performed several solo pieces, including Black Comedy, The Wacky Side of Racism. She was part of the casts of China Beach and Delta, both shows on ABC TV, appeared in a bunch of movies, including Working Girl, Big, and New York Stories, and on radio was the sidekick on the J. Thomas Morning Show. Nancy, it's so good to have you back.
Oh, thank you.
I bet you have a lot on your mind. So what's on your mind?
Today?
Yeah, well, in general.
Well, right now, it's kind of like a media journalism frenzy with Brian Williams' exit, the sad death of Bob Simon, who was such a wonderful reporter on 60 Minutes, Jon Stewart leaving The Daily Show. It's an interesting confluence of events.
So what do you think about it all?
Well, I'm really sad about Bob Simon's death. I just watched him do this incredible interview with Ava DuVernay, who was not nominated for an Oscar, as she should have been, or a Directors Guild Award for Selma, African-American director who was just so poised and so funny and thoughtful in this interview with Bob Simon. It was great. You know, he'd done so much. He was like almost a 50-year journalist, and he was only 73, so he's somebody that started really pretty young.
But the refreshing part of that is he was still working. I mean,
and
I don't need to
working.
Go this way. If he
no,
was a 73-year-old woman, would he still be
I
working?
Know.
I know. But
no, Sandy, you're absolutely right. And I tell you, it's just the double standard is just not fair because we have... As women, as human beings, we have so much more to offer the older we get, so much more thoughtful perspective to add to any kind of news story or acting or any kind of art. And it's really disheartening to see especially how women just get marginalized and feel like they have to Botox or tighten their faces or dye their hair and try to look a certain, you know, undeterminate age to sort of stay a player in the game. I just saw the Matisse cutouts, you know?
At the Museum of Modern Art.
I was so stunned by what I saw. And he started doing these, I think he was in his 80s when he started doing these cutouts. And a lot of the other artists put him down. That's not painting. That's just crap. That's so-and-so. These were amazing, amazing pieces of art. And again, he started doing this segment of his artistic career when he was 80. So, hey, women, we have a lot to offer at 50, 60, 70, you know, even beyond.
But doesn't this sort of blow your mind? It's 2015 and we're still talking about it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean let's stop talking
about
it and go back to Selma. Why wasn't she nominated? Or is this truly our cross to bear? Is this the way it's just going to be?
Oh, wow.
Till we leave these mortal coils?
That one question is going to take us through the entire segment.
Go for it.
Let's see. A couple things. There's a woman, a Black woman named Ruth Simmons. She...
President of Brown.
Brown, yeah.
Can I interrupt and tell
yes.
you how I know this? Because when my older son graduated Washington University in St. Louis in 2002, she was the commencement speaker.
Was she a good speaker?
From what I can remember.
I saw her on Charlie Rose and on a couple of other things. And then I was on a panel with her and got a chance to basically stare and fawn at her because I felt like, why am I on this panel? But I'm never going to get this right, but she said something along the lines of like these big struggles with civil rights and gender rights and whatnot. It's not something to be achieved like we're going to be over them. She said that the struggle itself and the continued work on it is something to just like deal with. And there's an art and a beauty to that. I'm not getting it right, but it was very encouraging, whatever it was. And I think I lowered my dosage on whatever antidepressant I was on.
Meaning
it's not going to be over. I think that we're going to always
haggle
with this.
This is going to be
the cross to bear. However, Look, I didn't think I would live to see a black president. I certainly didn't. As I get older, it's funny about race and gender because they're both very tough. But in some ways, I think the gender struggle is... See, I'm a black woman, so I can't really separate the two. But I think the gender struggle is pretty intense. And I think when you look at, let's just say for Ava DuVernay, the makeup of the Motion Picture Academy, it's mostly older white guys. It's
right.
Just, and which is just, what gets me is how in art, so many of the decisions and so much of the measuring and critical notice is done by older white guys. There are not enough women critics. There are not enough critics of color. I mean, when you look at like some of the 10 best lists and things like that, and the kind of art and the kind of books that are considered the best, these are things being decided by a small pool of mostly men
right.
that mostly look the same. So
maybe it's just one person.
One guy. Wouldn't that be amazing? Wouldn't that be horrifying?
He must be exhausted.
If it was just Ben Brantley, for instance, who I met once in the green room of some show, and I went right up to him and said, I thought that your review of Scottsboro Boys stunk, and blah, 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 blah. You know,
and what did he do, smack you?
No, he just kind of like backed off. I was taller than him, you know. And mostly when I yell, spit comes out, so that's not good.
So at least he got soaked.
But there's a big problem with this, with the gender and the racial makeup of a lot of decisions that are made with regard to culture. In fact, you know, I wasn't really that surprised at those nasty emails that, what's her name, who just got fired. She wasn't really fired
from Sony.
Yeah.
Amy Pascal.
Amy Pascal
The
disgusting Scott Rudin,
right.
who, strangely enough, I was also at an off-Broadway show years ago, and I knew who he was because he had a lot of articles about him. He sat next to me and was on his cell phone for the entire first half of the show and then left. I mean, I'm shooting him looks going, shh,
yeah.
shh. What a creepy guy.
Well, he was because he could.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, to see the emails that they exchanged, and yes, I've said ratty things on emails. I have. But to be that glib and, you know, I guess the president probably likes the Tyler Perry movies.
Right,
they're
right,
like two like high school girls.
12 years a slave.
Right.
Yeah.
But then to see that kind of mentality and then take a little look at the kind of movies that they greenlit
yes.
and the kind of things that probably get passed up, I'm looking at that, those series of emails and thinking, boy, a black filmmaker that has something that maybe is out of the box, they don't stand a chance with these two bozos, you know? There's all this brouhaha about the interview. When I finally saw some of it, I just thought, this is really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Although the guy who played Kim Jong-il is an actor that I know, and I was so happy for him. So aside from that, though, what a dopey movie.
Right, right. It wasn't even worth it all,
no.
right? I want to go back to this because I don't know what to do. As I'm in sort of the second half of my life, it's this sort of de rigueur. I hate this cliche, but I guess it applies. It is what it is.
I know. I hate that too. You know another one I hate? It's all good. No, it's not. A lot of it stinks.
You're
right. Don't
exactly
say
right.
that.
It's exactly right. But
it's not fair. I mean, I would go with that as opposed to it is what it is because, I mean, I think that's why I've been in therapy for more than half of my life because I'm like, it's not fair. And then, of course, why am I in entertainment where it really isn't fair, where Kim Kardashian can basically take her pants off and have more pull when it comes to attention and notoriety or whatnot than someone with great talent, someone doing something that's really important, like what you're doing, like what we're doing right here. If it was Kim Kardashian talks to women who pull their pants down, that would be like a show on Sirius or something. You'll probably have its own network.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
I feel the frustration. Exactly. But well, do you sort of straddle both sides of the fence in a way?
That's funny that we're just talking about Kim Kardashian.
And straddling,
straddle.
Yeah. No, yeah. Well, that
well,
was inadvertent.
What sides of the fence do you mean? Do you mean acting and other stuff?
Yes, and you're a force to be reckoned with.
You're
and
so
I'm not, well, no, but it's not I've come to praise Caesar. It's true. You're smart, you're funny, you're talented. You've done a lot of things. Now, maybe when you're laying in bed at night, you might think, I don't know. We're all sometimes our own worst enemies.
I know, that's true. I know that a lot of what my motor was when I was early, a lot of what pushed me was, you know, anger and revenge. I mean, I know.
Ain't nothing wrong with that combo.
I grew up in Queens. I went to public schools. I went to Jamaica High School. My graduating class had 1,107 kids in it. And I remember graduation day nudging my two friends, Rosalind and Violet, going, where was he? I never saw him. Where were they? they? But I was also kind of shy, funny with my little group.
Right.
But couldn't get in school plays and was in the pit orchestra of Anything Goes. And I can remember looking at the actors and kind of sawing away at my viola like, I hate you. And I know that there was a little bit of a motor there that made me determined when I went to college to be known and to sort of act, even though I didn't know what I wanted to do.
You wanted notoriety? I mean, that's what I wanted. I mean, I didn't have the look, so you were going to get to know me based on my mouth.
That's why it's radio. Your looks are, we have the same kind of looks. Let's just both, like, be good to each other, okay? We look great. We look fine. But I was not one of these kids that, like, was tap dancing on the top of a table when I was young and wanted to be an actor or anything like that.
You just knew maybe you were destined for something other than being...
I wanted to communicate in some ways. Uh-huh. I knew I wanted, I wanted to write a book. I had dreams about that. And, I think the first time I was able to sort of connect what I thought I wanted to do with how to do it was when I saw a touring company from Second City that came to Oberlin. And I remember, and this is very telling, there was a group of either four or five guys and two women. And I remember afterwards thinking, I don't remember anything the women did. I'm just as good as they. Well, I didn't realize that. Part of why I didn't remember the women was because they were outnumbered by the guys. They didn't get that much to say, but I sort of thought that in improv I could find something. And even though I didn't go as far as I would have liked to at Second City, that really opened the door to me to want to in some way communicate and do it in a funny way because I love laughs and the audience.
So you believed in yourself as opposed to putting yourself down. Because if you just fantasized
about...
Well,
it was a combination, you know, because there's always that... Well, I can't say always, but I think the insecurity that's there and the doubt also helps in a weird way kind of fuel the, I can. I think there is kind of like a yin and yang to it.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is repeat offender, Nancy Childs.
Proud.
Who has been sharing her views on CBS Sunday Morning since 2002. She's a ubiquitous, as I said earlier, voiceover artist and an actress and a woman who has a lot to say.
I don't even feel like we finished the first thing about gender. No, I'm just realizing it's not fair and it's really hard and... There should be more opportunities for women as we get older and have so much more to say and so much more to reflect on. I mean, you know, I think I did my first solo show when I was like 35 or something like that. And I thought, you know, I've lived. I've got all this to say. I can remember a few years before, I think Leanne Rimes, who at that point might have been 16, she had an autobiography. And I remember, like, yucking it up, like, Leanne Rimes, so far. And I'm like, what?
Right, at 16.
It was as stupid as Christina Aguilera singing At Last at 18. Huh? You know? Yeah. But I'm doing this solo show thinking, I've lived, I've done some things. Hey, when I look back, both my parents were still alive. You know, I still thought I was going to maybe meet somebody and have kids and whatnot. And somewhere between the first and second solo show, I saw Elaine Stritch mm-hmm. at Liberty mm-hmm. and Beatrice Arthur also had a solo show. And they were both in their 80s, or maybe Elaine Stritch was just 80 or so. I thought, okay, I don't need to do solo shows for another 30 years.
Yeah,
these
I'm
are
safe.
People that have stuff to say. Mm,
but they're anomalies.
Yeah. But it's funny. I think now, like, God, if I wanted to act... Now I think I'd be so much better than I was when I was on China Beach. I'd have so much more to bring to certain things. But, you know, the parts are, and I don't really even care about the acting as much anymore. I really like this communicating better because just on an ego level, it means so much more to me if someone says, I like how you think, mm-hmm. than I like how you interpreted that part where you were like a police officer.
But that's a really good point because you've got a lot to say. Which is very different than, you know, performing in a script. You know, performing a script. I mean, that you, based on your commentaries, you know, you had a radio show with Aaron Moriarty,
know.
I mean,
wonderful
all these
Aaron.
Other, that you've got a different kind of platform.
It's, well, and it's it was completely accidental. And see, again, I think a lot of it started with Second City, with the idea that improvisation in its way was writing. I feel like I said this to you before, but I always had this concept of what writing looked like. And it went something like this. Jane Fonda playing Lillian Hellman in the movie Julia, where she's chain smoking and like typing on a typewriter,
right?
Dragging on a cigarette, and right. then walking along with Jason Robards as Dashiell Hammett.
Yeah,
and they're like walking on the beach, and then she's on a phone in a phone booth calling him, going, "Dash, I just wrote a play. I think I'm going to call it The Little Foxes." That's yeah. what I thought writing was.
Right, right.
Not realizing that getting up on stage and sort of like having an idea and working it out with a partner, or just blathering and taping it and transcribing it, was writing. And I'm so grateful that I had that experience, because it was the frustration of not getting some of the acting work that I wanted. This was post China Beach, mostly, because I was really lucky with that. But it was that frustration that made me get up on stage and sort of start talking through things. And then working on the radio show with Jay, one of the jobs I had was this thing called Nancy Sings the News. And I made me go through the newspapers to find news headlines. And
did you come up with that?
Well, my friend Mike Braun, who was the producer of the show, and I, and Candy Roth, who did Traffic and Weather.
I worked with Candy Roth.
She sang backup.
Yeah.
Oh, but those were
those
like
days,
salad days.
Candy, Sandy, and Randy.
Oh, my gosh.
He was the DJ. I did the news, and she was traffic
funny.
Person. But anyway.
But anyway, because I had to read newspapers, that got me a little more aware of what was going on in the world. And then one thing led to another, and then I started doing comedy with these kind of like hippie friends of mine who were really political. And I was realizing, especially during the Bush administration, no offense, but there was comedy every time you opened
up
a newspaper.
Mm-hmm. You had your work cut out for
yeah.
you.
So that kind of snowballed into Aaron Moriarty happening to be in the audience of this group of comedian friends of mine. We had a show called Boomer Humor, I think. And she liked what she saw and called me a year later, and we started working on the radio, and she was friends with the exec producer of Sunday Morning.
Is that how you got the gig?
Yes. I loved Sunday Morning. It was my mother's favorite show. But when Aaron said, yeah, I think you could be doing stuff on the show, I was like what? I had no idea what she meant. And the show sent me a VHS of commentaries, and I watched them, and I thought, I'm not smart enough to do that. I mean, it was like Calvin Trillin. It was very erudite, dry type of stuff. And I thought, I couldn't even conceptualize what I could do. But I had an idea that I pitched to Rand Morrison, who was the executive producer. I said, I've had this idea that like high heels are a conspiracy against women. Thank you for laughing. You know how hard it is to try to explain why something's funny to somebody who's just, not that Rand's not funny, but to talk about what's funny is not funny. It like sucks the air out of the room.
Sure. And if you just don't get it.
So I'm saying this, and he's kind of nodding and thinking, and I'm thinking, I'm dying here. And I said, okay, well, great. It was great to meet you. And then went away. And then 3 months later, they said, I got a call saying, yeah, you're on the docket for this thing about high heels for this week. And I was like, ah!
Are you kidding? Just out of nowhere?
And I sat at the computer and was like, did it. Then lost a whole document, then found, did it. And then just went in and they, you know, gave me some cuts over the, you know, I just emailed stuff in. I couldn't think of the word email. And then I went in and taped it, and it went over really, really well. And the rest is kind of history.
But you come up with your own topics.
It goes both ways. I'll come up with an idea, or they'll come up with an idea and say, what do you think about it? Now, when I first started on the show, after I'd done my first piece, which went well, I believe they called and said, what do you think about, let's say, topic X? I can't remember what it was. And at the time, I didn't really have much to think about it. So I said, well, not much. And then they're like, oh, okay, bye. And then like a week later, I realized, wait a minute, you have to, yes. The next time they call, yes, you know, anything about anything. So I had some ideas about wealthy politicians, how if they're, you know, elected, they should like write checks and help their constituents.
Or shouldn't take a salary.
Yeah, I had lots of resentments. That's a lot of the stuff. You know, the cast of Friends making $32 million there last year. All kinds of things. Fox News and
well,
stuff
you've
about
never
the president.
Run out of material. You
I know. And then sometimes they had some great ones. Hillary Clinton's first book came out, and they said, what do you think of that? And I was like, oh, okay. So wrote a piece about that. Most recently, I've branched out from just doing commentaries to sometimes doing like feature pieces. Like I've got a piece coming up about mattresses. I don't know if you're aware that there is a mattress, a bed that is $108,000 that exists in the world here in New York.
Because why?
You tell me. I have no idea. I'm not going to, I laid on it and I'm like, and, you know. Because some people can spend that kind of money.
Exactly.
And greed's another thing that's on my mind. So anyway, the ideas come back and forth, and I've very rarely been flat out rejected.
From them?
Yes.
Well, like,
very
we hate this idea.
Rarely. Yeah, they don't hate it. Sometimes it's like
they
a
don't
little,
get it?
No, sometimes it can be a little too, like, not Sunday morning. Like, yeah, we can't really find an angle on talking about the former education secretary, William Bennett, saying that if you abort black children, there'll be less crime.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember
that. We can't
that.
Figure out how that's going to work. And I was
right.
like, I guess I understand. But what's nice now is they have an online presence. So if a topic sometimes might not quite work on air, I can put it online, and which I love. I'm happy about that.
And you can do as many as you want?
Well, no, I'm contracted to a certain amount.
Okay.
And if they want more, if they ask for more, I'll get paid for more, which is nice.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Nancy Giles, voiceover artist, actress, and commentator since 2002 on CBS Sunday Morning. So go back to the fact that it's 2015, and you are still the only.
Well, I'm proud of that. I mean, I won't lie. If there was some other, you know, chick that was like the black network opinion person, I'd be a little sad because I like being the because I like being the only one. It just hasn't translated into like bucks or something or some notoriety.
Yes, right.
I'm pitching myself for stories with that angle, and nothing's seemed to have worked so far. However, on cable, we've got Melissa Harris Perry, who's got a show, Joy Reid, wonderful, wonderful, thoughtful women that are either lead their own shows or are contributors or whatnot.
Would you like your own show?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah.
So why don't
you
have one?
I'm working on it. That's all I can say is I'm working on it. I have a producing partner, and we're working on different angles. But yeah, I would love it.
To have a political show?
Yeah, it would be like what we're doing, just talking about all the
whatever.
The perfect combination, I think, would be smart women and maybe live phone calls and guests and talk and stream of consciousness stuff, and also maybe like I can't decide whether it would be radio or TV or both. I also love the idea of like getting a strange string of songs and just, you know, getting dedications, real dedications. You know what I hated when I was on radio was I didn't realize how much of it was pre-programmed. Like, they focus group test all these songs and decide what's going to be played. I was stunned by that.
Sad.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
But I want to go back to this about a women's
well,
show.
Because we have so much to offer.
Well, that's my
and
point.
And it's not against
Why
men.
Is that
I love
like,
men. Men
the hell with
fabulous.
Men. Yeah, okay, fine.
But
I'm married to a man. But the
I know,
fact
but
is,
they get so, they like have hogged the airwaves. And it's the same kind of blithering. And then the women who sometimes get a chance to be on air,
or diabetes producing, you know?
Yeah, I know.
But here's
the
thing that I don't understand about this. We're 51% of the population. Here comes this, you know, press play and I spit this stuff out. Why do I feel so disenfranchised? I have.
Because you are.
I have disposable income.
I
can buy
it.
A car. I can go on a plane.
I know.
And I don't exist.
Sandy,
and I can't stand it.
I know. I don't get it. I feel, I mean, look, I'm a larger size than I'd like to be. I'm wearing size 16 pants. That's true. 1'6". But I think it's 65% of American women are a size 14 and above.
Mm-hmm.
And even with that statistic, I was doing, I was working on the radio show with Aaron, and I did an interview with Cynthia Rowley.
Sure.
Who is one of the snottiest people I spoke to ever. And I said to her, you know, there are a lot of women who like your designs, but your clothing line like stops at a 12. She couldn't have gotten snottier about how, well, you know, if we go larger than that, you know, it's like, it's a whole different pattern. I mean, we'd have to like redraw. I said, well, I'm not talking about throwing something over a piano. I'm talking about like clothing. I mean, I gave her the same statistic and I said, you know, well, what size are you? And she was very coy. Well, I'm one digit. I said, well, okay, so what size is it? Well, it's the same size I was in high school. What size are you? I said, I'm a 14. Mm-hmm. What are you? And she said, well, I'm a zero.
Oh,
and I said
God.
On the radio, I said, I'm sorry, I don't believe you can't be the same size as you were in high school because zero didn't exist then. But it was so snotty. Like, we recognize that there's a huge audience, a huge pool of money we could be making, and we don't want it.
That's why there isn't a sisterhood.
It's as dopey to think that there is like the women's community and it's all one thing as it is to say, like, I remember I was at a affiliate lunch at CBS, And I said, I was the only black person at the table. And these guys, once they got comfortable, started saying all kinds of stuff that was like, whoa. Asking, throwing me questions like, why is it that the blacks don't support Clarence Thomas and stuff? The blacks. Oh, yeah, yeah. I said to this one guy, what makes you think that there is one way of thinking in the black community?
Right,
I said,
right.
Let me say three words to you and see what you think. The white community. What do you think? It got deathly silent. Mm. These guys were like, who? I mean, we're not, even though we're all women, even though we're you know, we're all of one color, there's not going to be, I wish there were.
Well, I don't believe there should be a universal.
But in some ways, you wish that we could close ranks and all agree that, fill in the blank. On my end, I've just tried to find like-minded people and do the kind of projects that I want and try to get in there where I can. But yeah, I know there is a sisterhood, but I think you have to look at it in a more strategic way. And I don't know.
Well, I have to tell you that for most of the time that I interview people, at the women for this show, who I don't know,
uh-huh.
and I'm very flattered, and I'm not being self-effacing, that they say yes. They don't know me from a hole in the wall.
How can they not know
you? Well, but no, listen.
Okay.
But so somebody comes in, and there's a little kind of nervousness in the beginning, and then when they see, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but when I don't have an axe to grind, I interview because I want to know about you.
Wait a minute, but what's the nervousness about? Are they nervous that it's like going to be a feminist show? Or
no.
I mean, are they nervous about being on radio?
Maybe
or what?
I have an agenda. Maybe.
What's wrong with having an agenda? Like, and what's the definition of agenda? I wonder to these
people.
Well,
it's not that I want to ask you what went on in Benghazi, Hillary. I just want to know how did you get to where you are.
I know that's interesting.
The joy of this show is the women are so fabulous.
I know,
and I mean, almost to a person, I've really liked who I've met. I mean,
the ones that you don't like.
Oh well, I'll talk to you later.
All right, okay.
But no, you know that. It's just been so wonderful. And that's not the sisterhood BS that I'm talking about. It's too, you know, too broad talking.
I know. And it, with interesting stories about work and relationships.
And life.
I'm
yes.
not a parent. I could talk about like that, all that, about not having kids and the kind of things people say and the assumptions and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But yeah, there's so much really rich stuff to be discussed. And I cannot understand why something as good as this isn't on free radio where you can just turn it on and be listening to it while you drive. I don't know why, time after time, I've got to hear these guys like blowing off steam about crap. I don't want to hear
it's
Rush.
It's just that there's room for
Geraldo.
Everybody.
There is. And what I hear more than anything are the same kind of guys doing the same kind of stuff. And what kills me is I had an interview at a radio station about a possible job, and the station manager claimed that they were trying to do different things and wanted to hear new voices. No, they didn't. I don't know why they say that. No, they didn't. Mm. They ended up just replicating what had been on before.
Well, you know, back to it is what it is. It's the same old, same old. I mean, it really is sort of stunning.
I know.
We don't have much more time left.
Oh.
So what I need you to do is mm-hmm. just kind of briefly tell me what's on the fire for you.
To that end, to what we're talking about, I have a lot of talented friends, a lot of talented women friends who don't get a chance to perform the way that they would like. We're funny people, comedians, singers, and whatnot, but we're not like comedy club material. There's mm-hmm. not going to be punchlines. And we're storytellers, but we might not be hip enough to be part of the moth. So I thought, okay, well, I'll do my own show, and I can name a show after an insect like them. So I have this show
The
called,
Gnat.
Yeah, right. I that would have been better. I have this show called The Mosquito, which is like comedy with bite. It's at my dear friend L.A. Covan's theater, Dixon Place. DIXONPlace.org. So once a month, I've had this little gathering of friends, some comedians, some storytellers. My friend Kate McAteer, who's got a gorgeous voice. She puts some music to poetry. We've got musicians. I'm hoping maybe to even do some like short films. And we do like an hour and 10 minute show once a month. The one thing that I have a hard time doing is the advertising, just letting people know about it. Mm. I mean, I did make a Facebook page, but I'm inept with that stuff.
Yeah, me too.
And
me
if
too.
One more person says, it's so easy, you just hit send all. I'm going to kill someone.
Then it's you can kill so all.
Yes. But anyway, it's called The Mosquito. Like us on Facebook and whatever. It's just fun. And what I like to do is really give mostly women of a certain age a shot at doing this because it's hard for a lot of us to get booked at a comedy club or something like that. There aren't places that are that Yeah, so it's kind of the reverse of the way a comedy club is. I shouldn't say this, but this is my little secret thing. It's kind of the reverse. So it's an evening of mostly all women and maybe one guy. We got a lot of different people doing stuff, and I love
dynamite.
Doing it.
Sounds
yeah.
dynamite.
Yeah.
Nancy.
It always goes by too fast.
It sure does. So you'll come back again.
I'd love to.
Oh, that would be excellent.
You rock.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.